words. Okay, be it as it may, that's the reality. Today is December 11th, 2017, Monday morning in Yerushalayim, and once again I want to dedicate this year, as I did yesterday, to the President of the United States. I have to say, it's a moment in time. And what name did we give him yesterday? What did we add to his middle? Baruch Hashem, you're all with me. Donald C. Trump, Donald Cyrus Trump, should live and be well. And I want to make one more addition to two more additions to yesterday's share. This is an article from the New York Times, and it appeared in the New York Times December 9th, 2017, which means it appeared 2 days ago on Saturday. And it's written by Deborah Halfinger. I've taught members of the family. I went to yeshiva. I'm sure it's the same family, a rabbinic family from New England. And he describes daily life in Jerusalem, difficult and intense for Arab and Jew, and describes Friday. I don't know, Friday, I went to Machne Yehuda, and all I felt was an Arab Shabbos presence. Could be that I'm living here so long that even if there's soldiers and Magavnikim standing around, it doesn't really impress me. But then at the end of the article, he's quoting an Arab, an intelligent Arab, and the Arab is telling him, and I couldn't believe it, exactly what I said in class yesterday, quoting my father, except you'll see what the Arab adds. There will never be peace here, Mr. Zaida said. But he does not lay blame. Quote, if they take all the Arabs away, the Jews would eat each other up alive. And the same thing with us. And if you recall, that's exactly what I quoted my father yesterday in class, and here it is in the New York Times. And finally, as I would say what summarizes yesterday's talk on Meir, I have a student, Dr. Norman Gold. Maybe some of you know him. He's no youngster anymore. He's practically my age. But my student many years ago, I think he was 70 BMT. And Normie told me he was arrested 16 times along with Mayor Kahana in demonstrations. 16 times he was in the paddy wagon with Mayor. And he said, but you know what Mayer did? He was in there with 10, 12, 20 people. You know, a demonstration. They brought them all in outside the Soviet embassy, etc. And all Mayer did from the time they arrested him till they released him is he spoke Divrei Torah with those around him. And I think that little story summarizes Mayer Kahana's life. Okay. One email that I just want to... Dear Rabbi Rakefich, you quoted Rav Henkin in your last shiur and Rav Fishman as to why bad kings give birth to good children, why good kings give birth to bad children. But the answer you quoted was garbled in Yiddish. Would appreciate if you would explain it. So I just repeat the answer again. It's a losing battle. What can I do when I speak? I relive it. And it was the famous story that someone asked Reb Eliyahu Henkin this very question. Great kings, tzaddikim, the kids rishoyim, kings rishoyim, the kids tzaddikim. And he said, min veisve de tata hakim, and we knew who the father was. Min veis nishtve de mamas given, we didn't know who the mother was. And that's what I said last week. Okay, let me begin with the chilu rechimu. I thank all the people who expressed thanks to me, speaking about the Penich Fishman. Okay, it's my Hacharet HaTov. I've reached a certain stage in life where one has to be thankful to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and I want to be thankful to these five individuals. Reb Aaron Cutler, you've all heard the name. Who is Reb Aaron? Okay, his years, to put him into context, 1892. 1962. Bet Kislev, 1962. To talk about Reb Aaron's life, I could speak for days, years. I studied it from every aspect. It's a very interesting story. We don't have a definitive biography in Reb Aaron, and as I've told you 1,000 times over, Art Scroll cannot publish a biography, because all the Art Scroll biographies are whitewashed. And the problem is with Rabbarin, too many people know the details of his life, and it would be very hard for them to do a biography on Rabbarin and whitewash the details. Rabbarin had more influence, I would say, on the Litvish Welt in America. Two people had great influence, Mori Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, and of course Rabbarin Kotler. As an honest student of history, I have to say Rabbarin's influence, it seems to me, is even greater than the Rav. When you look around and see the different institutions today, more follow Rabbarin's method teaching than follow the Rav. But could be I'm wrong, could be someone else can have a different opinion. Rabbarin had an overwhelming influence. His life story is fascinating. He was born in a little town, Svislovich. He was known as the Svislovich. That was the town he was born in. His father was the Rav in the town. His mother died young. His father died young. He was orphaned. He wound up being raised by an uncle who was a dayan in Minsk. And in Minsk, he met his lifelong friend, Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, and their lives intertwined. Now, you have to understand, I said that Baron was born in 1892. This was a period of ferment and revolution, socialism, communism. It dealt with ills of the world that we still struggle with today. All of you are aware of this. We're all human beings. Why should Dr. Krauss be a multimillionaire and the rabbi sitting next to him has to watch how much he charges on his visa every month? Well, that's a fair question. Someone with a sensitive soul is swept up. Bolshevikism, Bundism, that was Jewish version, communism, each according to his abilities and each according to his needs. It's a beautiful thought. Not all of us are goyim, not all of us are giants of medicine, scholarship. Some of us have to be train drivers. Some of us have to be farmers. What's wrong? So each does what he can, and as far as money, you take what you need. The genius who invented the atomic bomb has one child, and the farmer has 10 children. These are beautiful thoughts. Now, I want to go even further, and I want to reveal whatever I know. As I grow older, let me get all the experience I had in life out of me. When I did my research on Bernard Revel, and of course I never knew it was my cousin at the time, did my research on Bernard Revel, all right, and his wife tells me he was in jail in Russia, 1905, he was a Bundist. So I go to the YIVO archives. I write about it in Washington, had unbelievable experiences there, but it's not important now. And sure enough, he was in jail, 1905, Kovna. More than that, I find the manuscript of a eulogy that his son had, two sons, the Rebels. Then Mrs. Rebel had problems. She told me she couldn't have more children. She regretted it, like most women, that you want to have a daughter at least. I understand the feeling in my family on the second and third and now fourth generation, on the third and fourth generation, I should say, we're only seeing boys, overwhelmed. It's like girls don't exist. It's unbelievable. So one boy was very brilliant. He was the younger of the two. There was Norman, was born 1910, and Heschel was born 1912. Heschel had dreams he would one day succeed his father. It never worked out, but he was a real Talmud Chacham, did a doctorate at what's today Bernard Revel. Those of you familiar with it, the Rambam Otzah HaSota, did a beautiful doctorate on the Nusach of the Rambam, explaining the Rambam, Hilchat Sota, what the Rambam calls Hilchat Shota. And he eulogized his father in Baltimore. I find the manuscript, and I notice two lines are crossed out in pencil. It was a typed manuscript. It's before the computer, obviously. So I erase the pencil marks, and I see he talks about his father's social justice. He even wound up in jail. So I saw that totally validated Mrs. Revel Yivo. By the way, I want to tell you in parentheses, a real problem with archival research. What I just told you never happened. What do I mean by that? I found out years later that, yes, he was supposed to give the eulogy in Baltimore. Tell me, when did Rabbi Revel die? Beit Kislev. Beit Kislev corresponds to December. The eulogy was given at the Shloshim, a month later, January. We're sitting here in December. We don't even need a heavy jacket when we walk out. In America, it happens to snow. It just snowed in New York. We spoke with our family last night. Snowed in Hillcrest. And over Shabbos, that's what we were told. And this eulogy was never given. He was snowed out. He couldn't get to Baltimore. Baltimore was closed. That's how heavy the snow was. So it's interesting, but it doesn't affect the historical fact that I found the eulogy to be more correct that he would have given, and these facts are in it. Now, along the years, I became very friendly with Mr. Jacob Dean Stock. Does anyone recognize the name? Yitzchak, remember him? Head of the library, a man, a bibliographic scholar, knowledge, particularly Maimonides. And we became very friendly. And some older people enjoy taking a youngster like I was and feeling you, they see a kid, a bright kid, seeking, searching, very kind to me. I actually went to visit his widow. It's a whole story. He got married. It's not for now. He got married late. She was much younger. I went to visit a widow when she sent Shiva here, and she told me, oh, my husband loved you. And I was very moved. And he opened up to me. He said, Arnold, you think that this is unique about Rabbi Revel? Let me tell you something. There were endless Gedolei Yisrael who were caught up in these movements. They don't admit it today. He said to me, if you weren't tantalized by the Bund, you had no use. He said, it's like the Gedolei Rosh Yeshiva in America who grew up in Shomer Hadati and Bnei Akiva and don't want to admit it, go back to the turn of the century, and it's exactly the same story. And he mentioned names to me, which I don't want to state, because some of them are Gedolei Yisrael. And he says, in their youth, they were caught up with this Bundes. Now, why am I telling you all this? Why am I telling you all this? Arye, absolutely critical to understanding Rabarin, his life, his Hashkafer, and all that comes afterwards. Understanding Rabarin until this very minute. All that's gone on in Yerushalayim. Burning books in public in Mata stuff. New York Times picking it up. They can pick up every dirt in the world. How come they don't give an article some graduate of YU gave a good shiur in Yerushalayim? That doesn't make the news. But all the dirt, that makes the news.
Schmutz.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Okay. And the story is very simple. When he goes to Minsk was a much better city than where he was born. In all the big cities, there was turmoil, there was anti-Tsar feeling, there was socialist propaganda. Unfortunately, the Jews took over every ism possible. Ultimately, when you go through the leaders of communism, the ideologues, those who gave it its vision, most of them were Jews. We even find out now that Lenin was Mezera Beit Yisrael. He had a grandmother who was Jewish. He wasn't a Jew, but he was Mezera Beit Yisrael. But Marx, Engels, Trotsky, who was Bornstein, you go one by one, Jews. So, in Minsk, he already was open to these ideas. More than that, and this is very crucial, his older sister, Malka, who took care of him after his parents died, there were only two children in the family, the older sister not only was caught up with this, ultimately winds up in Moscow, a socialist, could be later a communist, it's never been researched properly, totally irreligious, and she was pleading and beckoning already when he was in Minsk and later in Slabodka, come to Moscow, throw away the Narishkeit, be part of the modern world. This is a fact. Now, what hurts me, and here I can't survive in the new world, the obscure world, it's criminal. It hurts me. It's just, how can a person say he has Yirat Shemayim if there's a Zafa Dubinikant? I don't know how to say that in English, that he can lie in public when there are thousands of people alive who see you lying. So I'm now quoting from a volume, the only volume that came out, The Legacy of Maran Rav Aaron Kotler, written by a Talmud from Lakewood, Rabbi Yitzchak Dershowitz. It's a cousin to Alan Dershowitz, the Dershowitz family. The book was not published by Oxcroll, it was not published by Feldheim, because they couldn't get away with this. It would harm their reputation. And here it says in the book, he had an older sister, I'm quoting on page 63, who was religious, but secular educated and oriented, who would write to him in Slabodka itself to try to induce him to forsake yeshiva for the glories of the outside world. Religious? Totally irreligious. The way he writes, Dershowitz, it's as if his sister was a YU person, a Stern College graduate. You follow? Absolutely not so. Do you want me to bring you proof, living proof? Very simple. And this is why they burned the, not in Kamenetsky's books in public. He told the truth. Living proof is very simple. Rav Aaron felt a tremendous obligation to his older sister, Malka. She took care of him, as I said, when his parents died. In the 50s, they finally got her out. She went from Russia to France. She taught on a university level. She had a Kotler mind. And they got her to America. And she was set up in Queens. She, old age overtook her. The woman went through a lot in her life, and she went into a senior citizen's assisted living. Rav Aaron turned to Fabian Schoenfeld, Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld, Ayida Tzadik. If those of you who know Fabian, I don't have to describe him to you. And Rav Aaron had sich gebeten by Fabian, asked Fabian a favor, once a month see that one of the Rabbanim go to visit my sister. Mein Schwester, mein ältere Schwester, Malka. This was Rav Aaron's exact word. No, Rav Aaron asked Fabian. So one Sunday he calls my dear friend, they're not with us anymore, Roy Albert, the rabbi, the photographer, Sunnyside, Queens. And he says to Roy, Roy, do you have any funerals today? Roy says, no. He says, you're free? For a rabbi to be free on Sunday, not to have a funeral and unveiling, you understand? This is an achievement, because Sunday had all the funerals. Anyone who died Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the funerals were Sunday. It's like we spoke about in this class, in, or in Sunday's class, the Mohelim in America who made the Brit on Sunday. So not Shabbos. The ninth day, let the Brit be so they can get paid. So he says, come with me, you'll have an interesting experience. They go to visit Rav Aaron's sister, and Zee Bakluxer, she's crying. She says to them, ach, my younger brother, Azakop, what a mind, Agoinish a cup. He could have been the greatest mathematician in the world. These are her exact words, quoted to me by Roy Alpert. And take a look. He wasted his life. A kleiner Rebbele. He became a little rabbi. Quote, end quote. And this is in the last years of her life, Malta speaking, when Rabbaran was the Gadol Hadar, plain and simple. All right, now this story, well, these facts, and I protest what Dershowitz wrote. It's frightening, because right, you want to tell a lie, a white lie, if you can get away with it. But to have a mind like this, that you tell a lie and think you can get away with it. And all these stories, everyone, when I learned in Lakewood, his sister was from religious but secular education. He describes her like a Stern College graduate. What do you want out of him? Describes her like Judy, Zichron Lavracha, like Malka should live and be well. Got me?
How much older was she than
him? We'll never know for sure, but I would estimate 3-4 years older.
She said in the 50s she was in the home?
Or? Yeah, in the 50s. This is before Rabbaran died.
Yeah, so he didn't die until he said 60.
He died at 70. Right. And she died well into her 70s. She was older, may have been 6 years older.
She never married.
No, she never married, and she was totally, at one point they say, she was a total committed communist/socialist, Moscow University. I met these people in Russia. I mean, you've got to understand what I'm talking about. There was a famous refusal that lived in Gilo, got out in the late 70s, and one time she meets me at some affair we're doing for Russian Jewry. And she says to me, I so admire you, your Mesirat Nefesh, you and Malka, and you're so intelligent. How can you believe in religion? It is so foolish. Quote, end quote. I don't want to repeat more. I'll have to rip Kriya. This is what this woman said to me, without shame, without nothing.
She got out.
She's here in Ramat. What are you talking? I hope her and Einiklach have payas and beards and sits it out, not like me. You understand what I'm saying? Halavai. Now, why is the story so important? This story opens a Pandora's box. First of all, on the simplest level, already in Minsk, Rabbaran was hesitating what to do further. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky told him, look, we'll go to Slabodka. Slabodka was the big pool. At this point, Slabodka, the Alta, Reb Natan Svi, the Alta of Slabodka, the Levush Mordechai, the people there, tremendous pull. Yet the Lushan, Reb Yisrael Salanta, they went to Slabodka. But Reb Aaron suffered immeasurably from this conflict. So much so, that at one point he already was ready to go to Moscow. His sister had sent him car fare. And Rav Reuven Grzatsky, this is Rav Baruch Ber Leibovich's son-in-law, Leib becomes a central focal figure in America, the Beit Medrash Elyon. Rav Reuven Grzatsky convinced him, their variant versions, one that he already was on the tram, the bus, whatever was needed to go to the train, to go to Moscow, Rav Reuven took him off. The other version is not that he was on the transportation vehicle yet, but Rav Reuven convinced him, remain in Slabodka. And that's why Rav Baran had tremendous derech eretz from Rav Reuven Grzatsky, because he owed his spiritual life to him. That's the simple part of the story. And this is what we all heard about in Lakewood. It was a living tradition. This is what Reb Natan Kamenetsky wrote about. And as I told Reb Natan, I said to him, Nassim, from your book I learned nothing. I knew it all from Lakewood. You understand that what I was telling you was very important. You didn't reveal any secrets. You're telling the facts. Lehefech. It shows the greatness of Rabbaran that he overcame this influence and remained in Slabodka. The other part of the story lends itself to endless discussion. It's not just Reb Aaron, but we can also tie it in with Rebbe Chiel Yaakov Weinberg, the Sri Deyesh. You see, the sister didn't give up. She viewed Reb Aaron in Slabodka that he was kidnapped by the Frumma, if I might put it that way. Let me influence him to come out. She kept on writing to him beautiful letters about life in Moscow, about the university, about the lack of anti-Semitism, which, by the way, happens to be correct. When the communist movement began with the Bolshevik takeover and then it turns into communism, there was very little anti-Semitism, particularly in Russia, in St. Petersburg, which becomes Leningrad. Lenin, it's very fascinating that towards the end of his life, when they knew that Lenin was sick and they worshipped Lenin like a god, and Yitzchak will testify, remember Lenin's tomb, people lining up, and until today, I said to them, until they take away Lenin's tomb, I can't believe communism will not come back again. But they tell me, no, they leave it there as a tourist attraction. It's more like a Thanksgiving day. It doesn't have any religious significance. So Lenin recorded, I believe it was 6 recordings on 6 different topics that affect Russia and life. And this was replayed and reissued. It's probably available today in a computerized form. The only talk that Lenin gave that wasn't reissued and rehanced and enhanced was the talk he gave on anti-Semitism. He gave a beautiful talk that the Jews are smart people and we owe them such a debt of gratitude, and anti-Semitism can play no role in the communist world. And his sister wrote, and the Altar of Slabodka didn't let him receive the letters. He censored the mail. And according to tradition, when Reb Aaron found out, he was very angry, and that's when he decided to go to Moscow, and that's when Reb Reuven Grzebsky played the role in placating him. And this translates with Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg, the whole story. You should be familiar with it. It's classic that Rabbi Chiel Yaakov was the brightest student, they say, in the Litvashi yeshiva world 115 years ago. And one time he's coming back from his home to Slabodka, and he gets lost, and because he couldn't speak Russian, he took the wrong train. Morty, didn't that happen to you, Dada? Didn't that happen to you in Moscow exactly? All right? Except you wound up in Russia, in a different part of Moscow, and you found out how nice the Russians are. The Russians individually, they say it themselves, individually the Russians are the nicest people in the world. United, they can destroy the world. That's a Russian epigram.
That's why. When I went, I learned the Cyrillic alphabet so I could read.
Right.
The train station.
Right. We knew where Malka learned the Cyrillic alphabet. Win it all. Believe me, one time on the street we needed directions, and the woman spoke French. Malka knows a little French from high school, so they spoke in French. All right, be it as it may, he got lost, and because he didn't know Russian, he wound up losing a whole day till another train came, so he made up his mind to learn Russian. So the Altar was concerned, he's becoming a maskil. So then they made a shidduch, the Altar figured out there was a Rav, the Pshilviki Rav died, and he left his daughter, like this is Elizabeth, New Jersey. How did Rav Teitz become the Rav of Elizabeth? Rabbi Prell died, and he had an unmarried daughter, and the Balabatim said, whoever marries the daughter will become the Rav of Elizabeth. And Rav Teitz, Baruch Hashem, it was a beautiful marriage there, but he married this girl, and he was an intellect, a genius. She was a Yiddish balabasta. Never worked out. The marriage didn't work out. And they say, to a certain degree, it ruined Rabbi Chiel Yaakov's life. So again, you see, with Slabodka, with being a Rebbe, how are you a Rebbe? And how do you guide? And do you censor mail? Could you imagine in BMT here, they kibitzed me last Sunday. I used to call the BMT boys bummies. Now, that's not entirely true. I had three gradations. Bennies, Bimmies, and Bummies. Bennies were B'nai Torah, Bimmies were Beinoniyim, and the Bummies were the average BMT guy. But imagine he gets a letter from his girlfriend, and you intercept that. In back of the letter, I don't want to reveal secrets, S-W-A-K. You know, sealed with a kiss. So the Rebbe sees the letter. All right, some Rebbeim rip it up. I don't know. Is that what to do? I said, next time tell her S-W-A-S-K, sealed with a spiritual kiss. Got it? All right. It's an interesting, but you see, you start to understand Reb Aaron. And you don't have to be a great psychologist. Yesterday, there happened to be a very famous psychologist sitting in the class, a professor, who never really knew Meir Kahana. So he told me last night at Mincha Maariv, he said, you hit the nail on the head psychologically with the stories I told you, the two influences that created Meir as Meir Kahana. So you don't have to be a great psychologist to understand Reb Aaron and his attitude towards secular study. He made a decision, turned out for Klal Yisrael to be the right decision. He became Reb Aaron with all that's involved. The Slabatka years were the most precious years in his life, and he referred to them as Sheva Shanim HaTavot, time and again. Now this is very fascinating, and I'll give you a special gift. Moriah Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, when he spoke about Berlin, this week's Pasha, Mikates. You know how he spoke about Berlin? Sheva Shanim HaTovat. You with me, Dov? Take a look what I'm saying. Reb Aaron Kotler, who was orphaned at an early age and winds up in Slabodka and is the Ilui of Slabodka and he's the darling of the Rosh Yeshiva and particularly of the Mashgiach, these were the seven greatest years of his life. The Rav, who had parents and studied day and night with his father, never attended a yeshiva. But he went to Berlin. He broadened. What an experience in Berlin. Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg, Hildesheimer, Rav knew them, Reb Meir Hildesheimer, Reb Chaim Hella, the University of Berlin, the professors. The seven good years, Sheva Shanim, I heard this with my own ears, and then the Rav said, and take a look what happened. Within 10 years, some of the very professors who the Rav adored, admired, wrote his thesis under, became Sonei Yisrael, supporters of Hitler. Heidegger is the classic example. He never was in prison, but afterwards, he couldn't teach. And he never apologized. It's unbelievable. But it's interesting what the Rav called the seven good years and what Reb Aaron called the seven good years. You see, those years in Berlin, the Rav broadened. This was a different world for him. Even the Agudat Yisrael, even you know, some of you have heard my six lectures on the Rav and religious Zionism. Remember, the OU came out with the tapes. It's on YU Torah now. The problem with YU Torah is everyone bothers me. Where's this lecture back? I don't even know what's going on. I don't know how to turn on YU Torah. Someone should index it. But all right, someone should take off a year or two and index who should support them. All right, one of the nice people, Elder Blessings I got for this birthday, Baruch Hashem, so index it, make it available. So two different people. Giants of Torah, but total different outlooks. Fascinating. Now, in Slabodka, the Rosh Yeshiva is the star. Everyone knows of Reb Aaron. He marries Rabisa Zalman Meltzer's daughter. Rabisa Zalman Meltzer himself is a fascinating individual, considered one of the greatest students in Slabodka in the latter period. Not exactly a Talmud Mufak of Reb Chaim, but already understood Reb Chaim Shita, understood the Netziv. Rabbi Salman Meltzer's wife was a tremendous melumedet. These were people of tremendous stature with wives that were fascinating personalities. Rabbi Salman Meltzer's wife actually edited and copied the manuscript for the Eden HaAzel. And Rabbi Salman Meltzer thanks her, and it's well known, a melumedet of the higher order. She was from the Frank family. The Frank family itself was fascinating. Very wealthy family in Kovna. The husband died young, but left a large sum of money. And in his will, had four daughters, wanted each daughter to marry a first-rate Talmud Chacham, and that man, which they did, and Rabbi Salman Meltzer, and Rabbi Moshe Mordechai Epstein are brothers-in-law. They're part of two of the sons-in-law. Rabbi Zvi Pesach Frank was a cousin. He also was a Frank, part of the Frank family, part of the Kovna family, geniuses with wealth, not poor people. And Rabbi Aaron marries Rabbi Issen Zalman Meltzer's daughter. Now, going back just the generation, when the Slabodka Yeshiva began in the 1880s, we don't have an exact date, it didn't begin with a formal announcement, it just developed in Kovna. There are reasons why, but it's not for now. Developed in Kovna, and Reb Natan Zvi Finkel was one of the prime individuals, but he wanted great Rosh Yeshiva. He brought in the two brothers-in-law, Rabbi Salman and Reb Moshe Mordechai Epstein. In 1896, the Slutsker Rav, the Ridbaz, Reb Yaakov David Ben Zev Volovsky, the Ridbaz, last name was originally Volovsky, then he advertised it to Ridbaz, his Rashi Tevot. The Ridbaz wanted to open a yeshiva. So he turned to Reb Natan Zvi Finkel B'Alta and said, send me some good students. Here you have to understand Reb Natan Zvi Finkel. Reb Natan Zvi Finkel, this is not like YU, Teira Vadas, Chaim Berlin. Could you imagine someone would turn to Chaim Berlin, send me some of your good students. In Chaim Berlin, they'd laugh at you. We don't want to ruin our yeshiva. This is our yeshiva. You understand? This is nonsense. Each institution is competing with the other. Reb Natan Zvi Finkel viewed his golden life to establish as many yeshivas as possible. Torah with Musa. It's not a yeshiva, it's a movement. So when the Ridbaz turned to Reb Natan Zvi Finkel in 1896, he sent 14 students, headed. One of the 14 was the Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Issa Zalman Meltzer. Sent them away, 14 top students. One of them was the grandfather of Rabbi Goldberg, who was in class at the start of the year. He's now back in America, but they tell me he'll be coming back. His granddaughter is Ora Watson. That's a granddaughter. Vic is also related. 14 gave them up. Go to Slutsk. And the Slutsk yeshiva began, took off. After World War I, it moves to Kletsk. Couldn't remain in Slutsk. Slutsk was conquered by the communists. And part of the communist program is religion is the opium of the masses. The Rav said many times, I quote this in my work on the Rav, that it's a shame that the communists are so anti-religious. They didn't have to be. You could have conquered the world, the worker rules, workers of the world unite, each according to his abilities, each according to his needs, as we just explained. You don't have to be anti-religious. But somehow, because of Marx and the Jews involved, there was this tremendous hatred to religion. It's like the Schusterman Fund for Reform Judaism. They will destroy all of Torah, all of the rabbinate, all of Taret Mishmacha, Kashrut, Shabbat. It's an insane hatred, although without religion, total assimilation. Statistics do not lie. After World War I, it moves to Kletz, Poland. Ah, Rav Aaron is now the son-in-law of Rabbi Yisrael Zalman. He leaves Slabodka, he comes to Kletz. Students love him. Dynamic. Mechadesh. Innovative. What a mind. Rabbi Yisrael Zalman, who together with his brother-in-law, the Levush Mordechai, they were always closet Zionists, if I can describe it in that language. The Levush Mordechai goes on Aliyah, brings Slabodka to Israel, Chevron. Rabbi Yisrael Zalman wants to go to Israel, Palestine. Eitz Chaim Yeshiva selects him as the Rosh Yeshiva, 1923. He comes on Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, leaving Kletz in the hands of Reb Aaron. Reb Aaron, by the 1930s, the most dominant Rosh Yeshiva, the most famous Rosh Yeshiva on the European scene, and young. Still a young man, make the cheshbon, 1892 to 1932. Still a young man, in his 40s. You'll see why this is so important. And then, of course, the Hitler tragedy begins. And here I have to speak the truth in certain Haredi institutions. They'll be very upset with hearing the truth, but I can't help myself. It did surface here in Israel recently with the enmity between Hasidim and Mitnagdim, which we'll talk about at the very end, but maybe not today. It may have to be next time we meet. It was total hesed upon him. This talk of Das Torah, what we alluded to with Reb Henoch Fishman, total hesed upon him. Reb Aaron totally did not foresee what was going to happen. What they believed, and I've researched this thoroughly, what they believed, if you would have asked Reb Aaron and the other Rosh Yeshiva of his ilk in 37, 38, Rebbe, what will be? He would have answered, we've had some very dark periods in Jewish history. How many of you have degrees in Jewish history? The Crusades? Khmelnytsky massacres? Pogroms? Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Jews butchered, killed, massacred. I know a guy, Rakefet, gave Sherman this very kollel. If you're allowed to slaughter the kids, if the Crusaders are approaching and they'll take the kids and raise them in the church. Slaughter them. They shouldn't be Ovei Davei Dezara. And who? What a machlokes. Harav HaShoicher, Harav HaMoneya, the Beis Yosef. Leave it out now. I published on it. Terrific shilas. Their feeling was, and people who survived them, quoting them word by word, we went through hell already. We'll go through this as well. Quote, end quote. Mori, Charlie, you want the greatest proof that I'm right? I was told this in the early 60s by a family member. Keep it a secret, they told me. You heard the name of Gedaliah Shoah? Rabbi Gedaliah Shoah was, they called, the first American-born Gadol. This is the way he's referred to. It's American-born Rabbi Gedaliah Shoah. He was learning in Kletsk. Parents ordered it home. It looks black. gave up his apartment, sold the furniture. Before he left Europe, Rav Aaron sent him a letter. Come back. I'll re-rent an apartment. I'll buy you furniture. Don't leave. It'll be okay. That letter was hidden. It was published. You know when it was published? In the big machlokes between Agudat Yisrael and the Litvish element. This is before the Litvish element split in half. It was published in Hamodia here in Israel. I couldn't believe my eyes. The secret letter that Rav Gedalia Shor's brother-in-law whispered in my ears. We taught together in the 60s for 7 years. It was a very good friend, Rabbi Louis Isby. Published Bifnei Am V'Yeda. Now, this is all being said not to distract from Rav Aaron's greatness, but this was Hester Panim. And Hester Panim, Astia Panai Be'etahi. It's not just from kids. It's from Gedolei Yisrael. Could you imagine had Rav Gedalia Shor gone back? Shem Yirachem. Okay. By 1939, 1940, even Rav Aaron, everyone realized this is the end. Now, in America, while all this is going on, one Jew more than anyone else will come to it in this Monday class when we pick up again. Reb Lazer Silva sensed what was going on and he organized the Vat Hatzalah. Rumors here, rumors there. No one could conceive how bad the situation was. So Reb Lazer, who now was the most famous Rav in the United States, the last next to Rav Teitz of Rabbanim who were held in worldwide prestige, and he was even more than Rabbi Teitz, he decided to send an emissary to Europe to see with his own eyes what's going on. He chose Dr. Shmuel Schmidt. I've told the story, you've heard it from me many times over the last 59 years. I did my research. Fabulous story. Why did Reb Lazer choose Dr. Shmuel Schmidt? Sam Schmidt was well known in the Cincinnati community. He was not a Shomer Mitzvah, not a Shomer Shabbos. A Polite Zion, he was a socialist Zionist, and he figured if he sends someone religious, he's going to send Rabbi Zakheim, it will not have an impact on the whole community. I'll say, no, a Rav, he sees it his way, he doesn't see the truth. This person, everyone respected. He sent Dr. Shmuel Schmidt, and Schmidt saw what was happening. What he saw becomes crucial to Vat Hatzalah, to Shanghai, to saving what could be saved. And above all, Dr. Schmidt says of the younger Rosh Yeshiva here, he mentions a few names and he says one of them is Rav Aaron Cutler. He is young, widely respected, a very influential personality. Now this becomes very important. I'll come back to it in a second. About Dr. Shmuel Schmidt, I now want to refer to him as Reb Shmuel. And that's the story I've told you. It's been validated, published. I published it. Others have published it. And what a beautiful story. He goes to Vilna in 1940. The key person in Vilna, as you know from last week, is Reb Chaim Moshe Grushinsky. He goes to the Vilna Rav, and Reb Chaim Moshe says to him, Dr. Schmidt, can I chach rufen Reb Shmuel? Can I call you Reb Shmuel? And the doctor answers, I'm not worthy. I'm not a careful Jew, an observant Jew. And Rav Chaim Moisis says to him, give me your hand, give me your hand. He takes his hand and he says, you're Moisa Nefesh, you came here. You're Reb Shmuel. You should know that Reb Shmuel was never Mechalel Shabbos again. And he has Einik Lach Anua Einik Lach Shoma Torah Mitzvah. And this tells you who Reb Chaim Moisa was. Halavai, we could shake hands with a Jew and he'll never be Mechalel Shabbos again. This Rav Shmuel Schmidt plays a key role. Now, why does this become so important? Varchat Soler is fighting desperately with the American State Department. Yimach Shmam B'Zichram, the whole world against us. I don't enjoy hearing Netanyahu speak because he does not speak the truth. The Jew has to say, we are different, we are unique, we're never going to find favor in your eyes, and then give them the truth. Don't double talk and try to placate them, some in Israel, France, Germany, etc. In my opinion, you can call me a follower of Meir Kahana. I'm not entirely a follower, but on this level he's absolutely right. Speak the truth. Read the Bible. Bein amim lo yitchashef. We have to fight the State Department again to go into all the details. I have to explain what a non-quota visa immigrant, that's what you needed. You write about it in Revel, why you today was involved, Rabbi Revel, that ultimately kills Rabbi Revel. All the pressure, you have to show that they have a job, these Europeans, they're wanted, they're specialists, maybe the State Department will cooperate. So Varhat Soler, Reb Leizer Silver, who had a lot of contacts with the Taft family, they get a visa to bring over a great rabbi. So Varhat Soler made the decision, we'll bring over Reb Aaron Cutler. Why did they make the decision to bring Reb Aaron? They were elder rabbanim. Rabbanim who in America were more famous. They were teaching Torah already for 40, 50 years. But Reb Aaron was in his 40s. His energy was limitless. And they felt if they bring Reb Aaron, he can accomplish a world for saving others. That's why they brought Reb Aaron. Reb Aaron got out, 41, arrives in San Francisco, travels to New York. Wherever the train stops, there's some Europeish Jews that still understood what it means. Kletzka Rosh Yeshiva received him, and he totally throws himself into Hatzalah work. To a certain degree, Reb Leizer Silva is pushed slightly aside. Reb Aaron's personality, short individual, I don't want to say 5'2", I'll get into trouble again, 5'4", 5'5", I mean, you remember Reb Aaron, I'm not short, but a Bren, and the Varchat Soler, 41, 42, the whole Shanghai story, the Chilul Shabbos with Irvin Bunim, what we spoke about, I don't know when, but we spoke about it in this classroom. Oh, what went on to save the remnant, the Pleitat HaSheirah. And they were able to get out 1940-41. By 42, it became clear you couldn't save anyone. The State Department knew earlier, you all know the story, I don't want to have to go into details here. State Department knew, Roosevelt asked the Reform Rabbi Weiss to keep it a secret. But within months, it leaked out. And by the end of 42, it was clear that millions have been killed, will be killed, all of Europe is gone, every last yeshiva, every last Hasidic court. Now, watch. Emigrees are arriving in America, greenhorns, survivors, a few, 50, 100. Some of them are Americanized, go to Yeshivas Rishon Chanan, YU. Dr. Belkin by now is becoming a dominant figure and a tremendous gomel chassid to the refugees. He deserves a doctorate, a biography, so desperately it's criminal that it's not done. Others, Terev Adas, Chaim Berlin, but some of them were Lamdanim of Hakam, and they wanted the outer hain, what was. They couldn't Americanize right away. So one of the survivors who got out in 41, and this was the result of Yeshiva University, Rabbi Revel, was the Chafetz Chaim son-in-law who we spoke about last week, I believe, Reb Mendel Sachs. So a number of students organized around Reb Mendel, Radna Rosh Yeshiva, let's start a kollel in Zalzitzin and Larenin, we'll sit and learn, raise funds. And they began in White Plains. But Reb Mendel Sachs's personality, it was not Reb Aaron. Reb Aaron was fire, hail, fire, and brimstone. It didn't succeed to that extent. At the end of 1942, Reb Aaron already understood that the Hatzalah work is not going to take up full time anymore, unfortunately. And the word went out that the Kletzker Rosh Yeshiva wants to speak to all the B'nai Torah in America in the Clymer Street Shul. All right. About 75 showed up. I'm reading a memoir here from someone I knew from Lakewood, Reb Yankelo Weisberg. Vic, are you related to him? How does he tie into, doesn't tie into your family? Reb Yankelo Weisberg. He died a few years ago. I was grieved when he died. Whenever I see his picture, it brings back so many memories. Reb Yankelo Weisberg describes how the Rosh Yeshiva spoke with flaming emotion, and he spoke about the chain of tradition that began at the mountain of Sinai. And he says every generation added to the chain. Some made the chain in diamonds. Some made the chain in gold. Some in silver. Some in metal, brass, copper. But everyone added to the chain. And the Rosh Yeshiva declared, if we don't add to the chain in the United States, the chain of Torah has come to an end. And he encouraged them. He said, not every generation can be gold, can be silver. Who knew how to learn in America? Vadgit Kent Lerin, and who knows, whoever dreamt that American kids would be Bekiyim and Shas and Paiskim and could handle the most difficult shilas in Dvar Hashem Zu Halacha. Understand? All right, you had emigres, some Americans. And Yankelo Weisberg says, I had gotten smicha. I think he learned in Torah Vadas, and I was ready to go on to college to get a degree, to become an accountant, and after Reb Aaron spoke, I couldn't go further with my college plans. And a handful gathered around Reb Aaron, and they said, Rebbe, open up a yeshiva, renew Kletz. Reb Aaron said, I'm busy with Bar Hatzalah. And they said, no, you'll give Shayurim twice a week. You won't have to raise funds, they said to Reb Aaron. And there already is a nucleus in White Plains, but it's not succeeding. Take it, go, let's run with it. And of course, the rest is history. Reb Aaron looked around, and many people take credit. Why did he pick out Lakewood? One of the factors in Lakewood is Reb Nissen Waxman, was a Litvisher Rav. You all know Chaim Waxman, right? I mean, Professor Waxman, sociologist, son-in-law, youngest son-in-law of Rav David Lifshitz. So this is Chaim's father. He was a Litvisher Rav, and he was Rav of what we would call a modern Orthodox shul in Lakewood, and there was a modern day school. And he said to Rav Aaron, we know each other from the old country, I'll help you. That's one reason. When I learned in Lakewood, we were told that the real reason Rav Aaron went to Lakewood is he wanted an area, number one, where he could do, money could come into the yeshiva. And this very, this is a Litvisher, you know, depth. He made the Cheshbon HaNefesh that Lakewood was then a winter. Today, everyone goes to Florida. Every Jew runs to Florida. Those days, you didn't fly to Florida. You took the bus to Lakewood. Lakewood was always 10 to 15 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than New York City. So Hanukkah time, you had all the retired Jews from New York, from the Upper West Side, Yidden mit Ashtikel Geld with a little money. So you could make appeals. That's one reason he chose Lakewood. The other reason is Rav Aaron looked at the map, got advice that within 20, 30 miles of Lakewood, there's no college. And he didn't want to be in a position like Chaim Berlin and Teira Vadas, where all the boys went to college in the evening and during the summer. He wanted a situation where there was no college, and the truth of the matter is that the only institution near Lakewood is a college for agriculture. And I don't know how many Jews in America go to colleges for agriculture. In Israel, Baruch Hashem, we need, I have one of the people, Davos at my minion, is a graduate in Rehovot. If I'm correct, there's a branch of Hebrew University that deals with agriculture. He's an expert. He grew up in a kibbutz, a religious kibbutz, and he has a degree, and he makes a good living because he's an expert in problems that are real here. But in America, how many Jewish farmers did you ever meet? In 1943, with Machlokes, 13 students, 14 students, Lakewood begins. No one in the world ever dreamt that Lakewood would succeed. The attitude was, all right, Rav Aaron would begin, there'll be something in Lakewood. After World War II, the yeshiva picked up, and Lakewood took seed in America, took roots, slowly but surely. The Lakewood I came to know in the early 50s, Kletz, the atmosphere was totally different. When you walked in, you felt you were breathing Lithuanian air. The Eltere Bachurim, the older students, were all survivors who gathered around Reb Aaron, not just as a Rebbe, as a Rosh Yeshiva. He was their father. You have to understand what I'm saying. Not only survivors, victims. Not all were normal. Not all were normal. In Lakewood, I picked up the expression in Yiddish, as a normala. And that expression, on one level, was a tremendous compliment, as a normala. He's normal. What did it mean? There were some of the survivors who were iluyim, who were tremendous talmidei chachamim, gaonim. But sometimes, with being an ilui, you don't walk with your 2 feet on the ground. And this is a challenge. I need not elaborate. So some of them, you're an ilui, you're normal, what a compliment. The guy walks with his feet on the ground. But there were others, I can never forget this. Give you one example. Friday night, there was one student, a survivor, fine Talmud Chacham, disappear. Come back with unbelievable stories. He ate in, there were a few kosher hotels in Lakewood. He ate in this hotel, he ate in that hotel. Who we met, who we spoke with, and the middle generation, in other words, not the elder Kletzka, but some of the Americans who could relate to them a lot better than I could as a teenager, would whisper in my ear, "You're seeing the results of the Holocaust." And here I had a machlekes haposkim, I'll never forget this, and it greatly influences my research, my teaching, the knowledge that I acquired. Machlekes haposkim. Some of them told me, "These people are crazy after what they went through. You have to forgive him. He's not normal. He's hallucinating." And others told me, "No, it's not the Holocaust. They all survived. They're here with Reb Aaron. They learned too much Musa. And this is the result." I never understood the second description. They learned too much Musa. Was kann sein schlecht? What's so bad about learning Musa? But then later in life, when I started researching, and it's a world unto itself, again, I lectured on this many decades ago in the Kollel, the Musa movement, the Pumas HaMusa, the battle over Musa. And read Rabbi Phil Yaakov's essay. Read Pumas HaMusa. By the way, an interesting comment on the Art Scroll generation. All the books by Dov Katz on Tenuvat HaMusa, all five volumes have been republished many times. His sixth volume on the Pumas HaMusa and the level of fighting over the Musa, that volume has never been republished. If they can, they would collect all the volumes and cast them into the flames. But you see, when you get involved with Musa, you're opening a Pandora's box. It's what I alluded to last week. When you get involved in questioning every act you do, why I did this, why I acted the way I acted, were my intentions clear? Why did I give money to that poor man? Because I wanted him to thank me, or because I wanted to do an act of chesed? When I walked into the classroom and the students stood up for me, this is in Musa, you'll see Pumas, they stood up because I'm a Balgaiva and I enjoyed their standing up, or no, I didn't want them to stand up, but I understand it's because I'm carrying a safer. You start to question every action you do, you open a Pandora's box. Lo nitna Torah, the malachei hasharet. Take a look at the water in here. If I put it under an electron microscope, I'll see endless amoebia and paramecia, if I'm pronouncing it right, and every type of remesh and shekets under the world. And yet we drink water. You follow me? Lo nitna Torah lemalachei hasharet. So I would intend to believe that perhaps it was the result of the Holocaust, but I'll never forget they said to me, "Too much Musa." That was the effect. But Lakewood took off. And just to end out, Reb Aaron's life carried tremendous responsibility. And the saddest part of the story of Lakewood is that ultimately the entire responsibility for raising funds fell on one man's shoulders. And this was Reb Aaron, who suffered immensely. Fun stories, legendary. At times he succeeded, at times he didn't succeed. At times they would drive all day and they just came up with a $5 bill. And the Talmud who drove him said, "Rebbe, why are we suffering so? How can people shut the door in the Rosh Yeshiva's face?" And Reb Aaron gave a very fascinating answer, which in his case was very true, as I will illustrate in a moment. He says, "I give shayurim. At times I get excited during the shayurim." You get excited, at times you embarrass a student. A Rosh Yeshiva daf leiden, daf tan tshuva, has to suffer, has to do tshuva, because he embarrassed the student during the shiur. And that's why today they slammed the door in our face. And the stories are all over. On a more personal level, and I'll tie it in with the story. When I came to Lakewood, I was seeking, searching. I only wanted to learn Torah, with all being said about the kind of Fishman in Shanghai and Bnei Akiva, and all that we said yesterday about Rav Meir Kahana. But the desire to learn Torah was overwhelming. Libi chashka b'Torah, in the full sense of the word. And Lakewood and all. But one of the great shocks I had when I came to Lakewood, I came from YU. YU, person gave shiur. No one interrupted him. You raised your hand, you wanted to ask a question. All right. Generally speaking, every Rebbe at a certain point would take questions. I came to Lakewood. Oh, Rav Aaron would start the shiur. Within 10 minutes, the giants that were there, either the Europeisher or by now a few Americans, would shoot questions, and he would shoot back, and he would get all excited, what they call Ritat HaDeoraita. I don't know how to translate that, the tension of the Torah. And boy, they could be, I don't want to use the word, very, very sharp in their language. And I understand what Rav Aaron said. Sometimes you embarrass a student. One of the people who was here yesterday told me he once went to hear the Rav in New York when he was doing postdoctoral research. He's not from America. He's from, although he speaks perfect English and he sounds American, he basically is German, Israeli. Then he studied in Gateshead, and then he did a doctorate in America, etc. So he told me he was shocked. He went into the Rav's class. He's coming from Germany and grew up. And the Rav would shout at his student, and Kuruma Kop, you understand? How do you translate that? And here I'll give you a reward for coming today. On the house. From the IOU list. On the house. Reb Chaim Waxman's brother-in-law, Reb Nesson Kamenetsky, as you all know, published 2 volumes, Making of a Gadol. I still remember the day he got the volumes from the printer. I met him in the Zaharei Chama Shul, Machne Yehuda. We were davening Minchat, the same minyan. His face was beaming. And he showed me the 2 volumes. He just got the first exemplar from the printer. And he was so happy and going dream. And I bought the volumes the minute they reached Hanof. Within a week, you couldn't get the volume anywhere. Later, because I defended him, I got free copies and the second edition and the anatomy of a ban, which is not allowed to be circulated until at least 25 years after he's gone, etc., etc. What went wrong? All right, what went wrong? We're living in the art scroll generation where truth doesn't count, where Gedolim are born with kippot on their head. I don't have to elaborate. To me, this is the greatest compliment to Rav Aaron, that his sister dangled Moscow in front of him, cajoled him, attempted to convince him. And he withstood it. See, from learn from the man's life. Look what he rebuilt. Look what he did. I'm going to ask you a question. There's the first edition of Making of a Gadol and what's called the improved edition of Making of a Gadol. What's the difference between them? One difference. One little story was left out. And that story captures everything we're talking about. Rav Aaron, and we'll come to this, if not today, next week, next time we meet. Rav Aaron was the titular Rosh Yeshiva of Eitz Chaim after Rabbi Sazam Nelsa died, and traveled back and forth to Israel a number of times to give Shayorim. A number of times he was here, it tied in with the Knesiyah Gedolah, there was one held in 54. Reb Aaron played a key role in that. Can you see Agadola Vagodat Yisrael? The next one was 64, the last one was 1980. There'll never be a Knessiyah Gedolah again until Mashiach comes, because we Torah Jews fight each other with a passion. It's criminal. Criminal. I hope I'm not guilty of it. So, on the way back and forth, in those days you didn't have direct jet travel. You stopped off in Europe, in London essentially. So Rav Aaron stops off in London. Rav Aaron is stopping off in London and has to give a shiur. He gives a shiur in London. All the B'nai Torah come out. Rav Aaron gets all heated up. He's giving the shiur. Rav Aaron Kadako Bakodesh. And a student, a student from London with a red beard asks a question. And Rav Aaron shoots at him. Was for a shayla? Was bist du? A paraduma? What are you, a paraduma, red beard? And there was a footnote in the first edition of Making of a Gadol of this interchange. And his family in London was very upset. Everyone knows who Reb Aaron said this to in London. This is a disgrace. In the second edition, that story was taken out. That's the improved version. And I want to go on record that the Rav I mentioned yesterday, I believe, the Rav called me a Reform Rabbi. I long forgot. You know how it came up? People working on tapes of the Rav Shiurim out of the 50s, it came up. There's Rothkopf speaking, and they sent me a copy of that exact moment. I played it here in the Kollel for my students. I said, gentlemen, the greatest compliment I ever got. Moriah Rebbe called me for a show. It shows who mitchashev be. It shows he considers you a human being to deal with you. Oh my gosh, if anyone writes a book, The Making of a Gadol, about the Rav, put that in the book that he called, and also put a footnote in that Rakefet, people heard him say that the Rav called him a Reform Rabbi. Beautiful, what a compliment. But that all his classmates laughed at him and no one helped him with the Svara, that already, he's mad at his classmates, not the Rav. But that's the difference between the first edition to the improved edition. Was bist du? And I remember, paraduma, and I remember I was shocked. And then I asked I was an American kid, Lakewood wasn't that big, I had an inquisitive mind, so I asked the elder at Talmidim, do you pay? No, was geht on da? Der Shashivi geht da shir? And they slap him down, and they said, no, this is the minute for my rupa. And ein achinami, I found out that exactly what went on. In Voloshin, in Slabotka, in Mir, when there was a public shiur, oh boy, you faced an audience, you had to be careful.
Sometimes they say,
in the Gemara itself, you see the tradition. All right, for me it's a little hard. I don't know, a Rebbe's giving you shiur, you're not going to, but, what's the classic story with Reb Aaron? No, give me the story where this all comes to life. We're talking Reb Aaron Kotler, when he visits Israel the first time, and he gives a shiur in Hebron, and Reb Dov Schwartzman, Reb Beryl, shoots him down, and Reb Beryl is sitting there with his, remember the story, I heard it from my witnesses, I heard it in Lakewood we heard the story, but I heard it from, when I came in Aliyah, I became very friendly with Reb Beryl's Chavruta, with Reb Meir Chovav, Reb Meir Freund, Zeichet Tzadik Livracha. He lived on Rehov Chalap, a half a block from me, we davened together for decades. He was in there, sitting there. So Reb Beryl has his feet on the desk. And Reb Aaron thunders at him, Azei zitzmin? Azei hot min derech eretz? Min hot net het ashir? And Azei zit, that's the way you're sitting? And Beryl doves, thunders back at the Rosh Hashiva. Eib de kletz de Rosh Hashiva, it can't learn in derech op geben derech eretz. Oh, but then it's an Amara, it's an Abbas Mishter Rambam. And he should, says, if the Kletzker Rosh Yeshiva knew how to learn, I would give Derech Eretz. But when he's in ignorant, imagine, he says, but hey, there's an Amaretz, and he quotes a Rambam. And Rab Aaron couldn't go further. He shot down the whole Shia. And that's, Rab Aaron afterwards came over to him and said, come back to America with me, and I'll give you my daughter in marriage, which, again, was a problem ultimately. As you know, they married, and they had children, but ultimately they got divorced. Hey, apples and oranges, if you understand what I'm saying. Sometimes Shidduch can look beautiful, but you need someone that you share. Reb Moshe, when Reb Moshe writes, you remember the famous tshuva, Reb Moshe and Yoredeya? What a tshuva. I believe it's 90, and the first time Reb Moshe deals with Yoredeya, this yeshiva boy, who has to be a wise guy from Chaim Berlin, Ellie, from where you went. So he's figuring out that talking to Shidduch, he's going with a girl, he wants to test her. So what's Pshat Testa? He writes to Reb Moshe, they're going to go to a kachelin. All right, no one knows what a kachelin is. Before the Jews were wealthy, they used to go up to the mountains, and each one would have one room, a bedroom, and they shared a kitchen. So a kachelin, he would be in one room, she would be in another room, but she would prepare his food, and she would make up his room, the bed. He wants to see if she's a balabasta. So Reb Moshe, and he asked Reb Moshe, it's a serious, check me out, you'll see I'm telling the truth. So he asked Reb Moshe, can I do this? Reb Moshe said, nothing wrong with it, it's not your wife, there's no din of hachaka like a nida, can't put food in front of you, or can't, you know, you watch her make your bed, you're not allowed, it's the chibah. But they're strange women. Yeah, it's allowed, but he says, you're an idiot. If you think you can test her, she can fake you out, she can make you a five-course meal, make the bed, and by, when you're married, she says, take dry cereal. What am I, your slave? What am I, your shivcha? You understand? So Reb Moshe says, three things to look for. And if it's genius. First of all, the attraction. When all is said and done, boy, girl, boy, if the attraction is not there, it doesn't get off the roof. Number two, she can come from the finest family, but you have to know that she herself is a Shomeret Torah mitzvah. But number three, that the backgrounds are similar, that you share, you have the same concepts, language, understanding, desires, goals, genius. I'm paraphrasing Reb Moshe. I'm making a little, you'll look in, you'll see, he says it in one sentence, but that's what he's referring to. Reb Moshe had a lot of seichel, and Reb Aaron, but the story is indicative. Imagine saying to the Kletzker Rosh Yeshiva, I'm Aretz. Wow. Reb Dov Schwartzman, Reb Berel. Story, absolutely true. We heard it in Lakewood, B'Shas Maisa. And afterwards they got married. It was a big simcha, but a simcha that had difficulty to it later. Let me end off this part of the class. I haven't said one word about my going to Lakewood and what happens and what it was like and the whole experience and the Talmidim. And we have a lot more on the heritage and Chabad, but let me end off. If anyone would ever ask me, what Gemara would you say characterizes Reb Aaron Cutler? There was one Gemara that he quoted all the time, hysterically. Sanhedrin Saditet Amid Aleph, the Pasuk, in Vamidbar Tetvav, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Ki Dava Hashem Baza, V'et Mitzvato Hafer. What does it mean, Dava Hashem Baza? More or less, this very question gives many answers. But the answer that Rab Aaron would quote time and again, Rab Nahari Omer, Kol She'efsha, La'asot b'Torah ve'eino osek. If you have the time, you have the ability, you have the mind, you can study Torah. And instead of studying Torah, you do something else. Davar Hashem Bazar. And this was Reb Aaron. This was total, complete, absolute opposition to any general studies. When Mr. Mendelovich came to Reb Aaron, long before what we spoke about many times after World War II, but already in the early 40s, when day schools are opening, and you need teachers who are pedagogues and know how to teach, and Mr. Mendelovich, who was of Hungarian origins with a great broadness and understanding of Rav Hirsch and Rav Kook and others, wanted to open up a school to teach pedagogy, a teacher's seminary. Rav Aaron absolutely refused. Told Mr. Mendelovich, you get involved with Teachers College, the results have been horrendous, quote end quote. He was referring to teachers colleges. Don't have to go further than Teachers Institute at Yeshiva University, which was opened as a teachers college. Most of the kids, or a good percentage of the kids who went there in the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, didn't remain religious. Had the reputation. That's where you run away if you want to be a basketball star. That was the reputation, T.I. I remember in Lakewood, people cursing Teachers Institute. Her brother went there, became a nice rapper, right? And later in years, I understood it's not just Teachers Institute, it was the Times. But we need a yeshiva only. Later, Mr. Mendelovich wants to open a college with Teir Vadas, with Chaim Berlin. This is what Shir Lyman did the research on and published in Tradition. And everyone writes about it from that era. Reb Aaron, absolutely not. Need I tell you, Yeshiva University, Avi Avot HaTumah, under one roof, a college with the yeshiva. This was Reb Aaron. This was Reb Aaron. And you hear an echo of his sister whispering to him. He made that decision. He stood by it. He intensified it. He certified it. And he succeeded in his viewpoint. You can't put down what developed in Lakewood. With all the problems, I'm not telling you it's a Gan Eden. Believe me, I know what's going on. But Lakewood is here, here to stay, and we're sitting here because of Reb Aaron. Why you, hold on 1 second, it's why you never had Kollel. The Rav was a shtickle opposed to Kollel. That's what Zayin would say. You have to be practical, you have to get out to the world, you have to do, have to accomplish, Meluat Aretz v'Kivshua. Today, why you? I can't even count how many Kollel there are. What are there? 5 different Kollel. We're one. Give credit to Reb Aaron Kotler. But I've only scratched the surface. Yitzchak.
With all his opposition to secular studies, what was his relationship, the personal relationship with Rav Soloveitchik?
I'll tell you. With the Rav and Reb Aaron, there was mutual admiration. On the other hand, there were marked differences between the two.
I'm talking about their interpersonal relationship.
No, listen, you know very well that when the Rav got the question of taking the Jews out of Cuba on Yom Kippur, he didn't answer right away. He said, call me back in 2 hours. So when Mr. Weingarten, David Weingarten, Zichron Levracha, meets him at a wedding years later, says, Rebbe, why did you tell me to call you back in 2 hours? Why didn't you give me the answer right away? The Rav was matir. And the Rav told him, I wanted to consult with Reb Aaron. So you see, when the Rav had a shaila like that, he didn't call the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He didn't call Reb Moshe. He called Reb Aaron Kotler. The Rav was very close to Reb Schneer. Reb Schneer actually told me that when he came back from Israel, when he studied with Rabbi Zalman, his father told him, go study with the Rav. And for an entire year, he came to the Rav Shirim in the yeshiva. These years, heard it from Reb Schneer. Today, no one will believe it. I don't lie in Yerushalayim on a Monday morning, okay? Maybe in Hollywood, Florida, but not not on a Monday morning. Okay, let me tie it all together. There's a lot of... first of all, we gave you a feeling of Rabbanan today. Dana, did you know all this, or some of it was new?
Some was new.
Some was new. Okay, your father learned the Rabbanan. But this was Rabbanan, and that Gemara, the Vahar Shem Bazal, we have tapes of Rabbanan. The Vahar Shem Bazal, gaining college, the faculty signs from learning. By the way, the Rambam in the Perik in Hilchot Talmud Torah quotes this Devar Hashem Bazal exactly. Misha Yechol La'asot, this is what he quotes from the Gemara, as the opinion of what the Pasuk means. But Rabbanan, what a story, what a story. An orphan, a sister in Moscow, and see, those were the times. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, not one of his siblings remained from. Not one. In the West, out in the Midwest, grandchildren of his sister, I believe, they became Balei Tshuva. And they became close to Rabbi Yaakov. Grandchildren. The Lubavitcher Rebbe knew three brothers who remained from. One brother, the Rebbe. Which also reveals why the Rebbe had this tremendous zest for outreach. You follow me, Dov? You're influenced by your life situation. But those were the times. Today we have a problem that lashim, but percentage-wise, it's no comparison to what was 100 plus years ago. In Lakewood, there are big problems today too. See, this is a real problem when Torah becomes regimented. This is the way you live. It doesn't have zest to it, and life to it, and meaning, and rebbeim who inspire. Ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's all. I don't want to say another word, but thank God. Good children. One second. Where do I begin? This I took care of. Okay. First of all, I want to just show you this volume. If you recall, in my lectures on the Rav over the years, I've always spoken about the Rav's problems in Warsaw. That the Tachkam only, he fought bitter battles with Professor Meir Balaban. I picked up this book, it's a doctorate done at NYU on Professor Balaban, who taught with Reb Moshe and Tachkamoni. He actually was the dean. And I have to say, the battles with Reb Moshe are in the book. I was very impressed. And it's exactly what I've said over the years. I don't have to add or detract. It was Chochmat Yisrael versus Briska Talmud Torah. And believe me, those two worlds can conflict. The Rav's son, my classmate, Reb Chaim, Dr. Grach, he is the classic example of someone who merged those two worlds. You have no idea Reb Chaim's knowledge, ability, his publications. What an achievement. He merged the two worlds. I don't believe anyone else ever has. But the Machlokes was real, and Ein Hachinami, that's one of the reasons Shulamit Meiselman is absolutely right in her memoir. One of the reasons her father was happy to move to America and get out of Tachkamoni. And later on, he fights with Zeitlin. But Zeitlin already, Reb Moshe, was strong enough that he could slaughter Zeitlin. In Europe, he didn't have that same gusto, that same ability. Professor Balaban ran out. For your knowledge, if anyone wants a copy, the schedule moves sideways now. Next week, there are no classes. It's Hanukkah. I'm going to be in Ranana through Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Big events in Ranana. Next week, after Ranana, December 24th and December 25th, very interesting days. Are you allowed to learn Torah? Nitlnach, those days we have classes. If anyone needs a reminder, I ran off a stack. Next, Loro, Rav, according to Rav Kook, Parshat HaShavua. Two copies of Bar HaTorah, the Sechidushim, gives you insight. This is a famous Sfadik Yeshiva in Bnei Brak, where Rabbi Mazuz is the Rosh Yeshiva. It's a yeshiva which is not entirely Haredi. They, if you know the Israeli politics, they are a thorn in the side of Shas. And that's their different Torah. Here I have a world. This is very interesting. In the Turim, Parshat Vayeshev, they state that Yerushalayim will return to its glory and be recognized. In other words, what President Trump did is absolutely predicted. This is the Lubavitcher Rebbe, his right hand, Reb Nissen Mendel. He's publishing about the Rebbe, the letters he wrote. Here you see the Rebbe answering, can anyone become a Rebbe? And you'll see what the Lubavitcher answers. I'll tell you, that man was a genius of geniuses, and yet he could bring himself down to the simplest level for people. Kol HaKavod. This is a wonderful piece of work on Lead the Yeshiva. I learned things from here, why he brought the Meitzer to the Etzel, Rabbi Reines, the Meitzer to Mizrahi, a bit of scholarly work. If anyone, I got two copies, so if anyone wants, it's yours.
Which is yours?
Lida, L-I-D-A, the Mizrahi Yeshiva, Lida, the Mizrahi Yeshiva in post-World War I, and about the Mechita, very interesting. These are two copies of Satmar in America, and how Satmar takes advantage of America to enable themselves to separate from the general community. This is unbelievable. This is a Yutet Kislev Fabrengen. Would anyone want to guess where this took place? Kehilat Jeshurun, KJ, remarks by Rabbi Haskell Lookstein. Guest speaker, Rabbi Bert Siegel, reformed, quote, rabbi, how Hasidut changed my life. Soul-steering melodies, special video presentation, Fabreng with, and a whole list of Rabbanim who you Fabreng with. Unbelievable. I guess Chabad is saying, Ashreinu Shezachinu. New York Times, Why Are Jews Funny? Interesting article. All the top comedians are Jewish. And I say a simple thought. In order to survive the world and to survive our own foolishness and machlekes, you got to have a sense of humor. This is very interesting. I cried when I saw it. A documentary film on Rostova. It's Rostov in Russia, where the fifth Rebbe is buried. And it's about the revival of the Jewish community there. It's not big, but all around the fifth Rebbe's grave, that the Rebbe's buried there, they started to ask, who are we? After communism fell, and today you already have a whole number of Shomer Shabbos families. And there's an old lady there they interview. Rabbi Yitzchak Kogan comes there. Very, very moving. This is frightening. California fires enter the heart of Los Angeles. I don't know if you're aware that this is, the fires have impacted even on the Jewish community. And my own niece came back to New York, my wife's niece from Los Angeles. She's overwhelmed. She can't breathe. She has problems. And wow, the fire flames. I don't know. I think the Ribbono Shel Olam is a little bit upset with our sexual behavior. And this article is the saddest article, the New York Times did investigative research on Harvey Weinstein. And it's just sickening what this man did and how he protected himself and how many people protected him and covered for him. And I salute Time magazine that they named the silence breakers Me Too Person of the Year. And you all know how this has affected Israel as well. And finally, very sad, no wonder there are fires in the world and floods and all that's going on. Australia makes same-sex marriages legal. And they sent around, they did a survey, if you want to call it, a national referendum, which they sent around and people voted. And the country voted, I think it was 62% in favor of same-sex marriages. And go back to Alex de Tocqueville, and this is the great fault of democracy. Imagine if we put Shmirat Shabbos to a vote, Kashrut to a vote, Tarat Mishpacha to a vote. What would be left of Yiddishkeit? Hashem Yirachem. All right, let's be happy and let's be positive. And can you believe it or not, and if few hours, how many hours? Two more days? What is it? Wednesday night is the first night or Tuesday night? Tuesday night already. Oh my gosh. How many hours are left? We're lighting Hanukkah candles. All right, I don't want to bore you anymore, but I will speak in Ramana about the miracle of Hanukkah and my grandchildren and great-grandchildren making a party for their Sabu. So we have a lot to say about Hanukkah. We'll leave that for another time. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming to class. I want to apologize that I didn't greet all the people listening across the wide expanse of the Jewish world, but I greet you now. And Be'ezrat Hashem, in 2 weeks' time, we pick up on Sunday exactly where we left off with Reb Aaron. I apologize that I can't do it differently, but there's only one way I can do all this, is doing it on a continuous fashion. We'll pick up with Reb Aaron. We'll probably need another day to do Reb Aaron, and then we'll pick up with Reb Yaakov Moshe HaKohen lesson. And I want to say thank you to them with all my heart and soul. Chag Urim Sameach, until we meet again in health and happiness. Das V'danya. One second.